Welcome back to another episode of Thanos to Theos. We are a podcast for youth and student workers committed to reaching teens with the gospel, featuring conversations from comics and culture to theology and ministry. We're also part of the Rooted family of podcasts, which includes Ask Alice, All About Boys, and the Rooted Youth Ministry podcast. Rooted is a ministry focused on advancing gospel-centered youth ministry. And if you want to learn more, check out our website at www.rootedministry.com. I'm your host, Clark Phobes, and these are my co-hosts.
I'm Mike McGarry, and I'm a youth pastor just a little bit south of Boston.
And I'm Kevin Yee, coming at you from L.A.
And as you can tell, as you can see if you're watching or even listening, that we are recording on video again for the purpose of our second ever special guest, Miss Rebecca Heck, who hails from ATL, Georgia. She is a former steering committee member of Rooted Ministry. And she's also a current youth ministry. So, Becca, why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself and what brings you to our podcast?
Oh, yeah. So I'm currently the director of student ministries at my church here in Atlanta. And I'm working on getting my MDiv from RTS Atlanta slowly and steadily and surely one day, probably in the next 10 years.
The 10-year plan.
That's the plan always. I grew up with, superheroes being a big part of my life. I'm one of five kids. And so I've got brothers and sisters, and superheroes have always been a big part, and still, like, it's a huge part of our family. So the fact that Marvel decided to put out like a new movie every Christmas has really, really worked out well for us. Because it becomes a family thing that we do all the time. And I grew up watching, you know, Batman Adventures and X-Men and playing all of those things. And so it's an honor to be on this podcast. I'm very excited about what y'all are doing.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us, Becca. It's good to have you just as a friend too and as a contributor to this. So tell us a little bit specifically, what is it specifically that draws you to the superhero world and something that, you know, piques your interest? And also, who's your favorite superhero? We always have to ask that on this show with the guest.
Yeah, I think what draws me to it is that general sense that I think we all have, right? Is that what would it be like to live in a world where you can make the impossible possible, right? Where you can absolutely take over something, that you can conquer things. And I think for me, the superhero world was always so enticing because it's also one of the places where, and you guys know me, so this probably won't be a shocker to you, but it's one of the few places where in storylines you actually see men and women working side by side together. Mm-hmm. And I think that had a really big impact on me, even from a younger age, that you know, whether it was my siblings and I playing Power Rangers or X-Men or Star Wars or anything, it was always this general sense of, like, there were always options for me. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to, you know, just be a boy character. There were options for me as a woman too, and as a girl. And so my favorite character to this day has been always is Jean Grey from X-Men.
Nice.
I always felt, and I even remember when they finally in the animated series got to the part where they were going to introduce her as Phoenix, mm-hmm. the like utter pain and emotions that I felt of like, whoa, 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 whoa. How is this person who is so good all of a sudden not so good and so powerful and yet also has mercy but doesn't, right? Like it was hardcore for me. But she's still my favorite. I think partially the way that I've always been a big feeler. I'm a very big empath. I'm a 2 on the Enneagram. I'm an INFJ on Myers-Briggs. So like feeling things and being able to tell what other people are feeling has always been a strength of mine. And so seeing that, like, a huge part of Jean Grey's life is that she feels people's pain and she feels what they're experiencing, and being able to take that and do something good with it was just mind-blowing to me. So she's my favorite still. And if I could ever, like, you know, throw a bunch of money at a costume, it would probably be that. So,
One day.
It's her or General Leia, but more than likely it's going to be Jean Grey first. Should, just so you guys know.
We should have a rooted cosplay at the next conference.
Listen.
One day
not
we'll
mad
make
about it.
It. Cool, that's awesome. Thanks, Becca. We actually just talked about Phoenix on our last podcast, how she's arguably one of the most troubled and powerful and yet complex characters, so there's a lot to mine there. But it's interesting to me that you also mentioned that the world of comics, what drew you in was this idea that you had options as a woman. And, you know, one of the reasons we brought you on is we've been wanting to talk about this this idea of women in comics, women superheroes, because whenever we talk about comics, especially from a Christ-centered or Christian perspective, there's always this question of like, well, aren't the women always scantily clad? Aren't they always just objectified? And yet it's interesting that you mentioned that you had options with superheroes. And so one of the things we want to talk about is how there's this long history of women showing up in comics that reflected the historical position of women in culture. And yet we've also seen, and as we've talked about on our podcast before, that the comic writers were often pushing forward on cultural norms ahead of their times. Like Marvel was the first one to put out a black superhero with Black Panther in the late 60s. And same with Susan Storms in the 60s with the Fantastic Four. And then you had DC with Wonder Woman in the 40s. And so we have this, you know, this evolution, we should say, of the women in comics. So what do you guys think? How does that reflect when we're reading comics, when we're watching the movies? How is that reflecting and maybe affirming some of these image of God things in women? And yet also, what are some things we should be aware of as we're consuming it and being aware of the female role in the superhero universe?
I mean, I do think, you know, some of the things that we can say that it did reflect in the creating the image of God is to that sense of what I pointed out, right? That like when you can see men and women working together, there's a goodness about that. There is a throwback to Eden, right? To the way in which we were supposed to be doing these things and the way in which we were supposed to be out in the world. So I do think that is there. I think growing up with characters like Rogue, who often would fly off at anything, really had a major anger issue, and yet was also cared for and accepted by the rest of the team. I guess arguably all the X-Men had anger issues, but right, like it was
so true.
You know, the sense of there was also an acceptance and a carrying and so I think there's also that too. Anytime we have a team of people and a community of people that are willing to accept you as you are and say, we got to take the goodness of you and make you better, or we got to take the goodness of you and use that to bring healing to the world. I think that's always going to be a shout out to who God is and how he created us. You know, and then on the flip side of it, there's a lot to be said for the costumes, for the uniforms or whatever they called them. And I think as a girl watching that growing up, it probably does speak a little bit more to the other conversations. And I hope we get to this later, but the other conversations that were happening in the home as well, that for me, it was never an issue. I didn't really notice that it was a thing until I probably got into my, into high school and started to have other conversations with friends where for them, but for me, it was never a conversation about them being over-sexualized. And so I would actually love to hear from you guys as men growing up in the world, what all did you guys notice? What did you see? How did you, all that stuff, how'd that impact you?
Yeah, I mean, even to back up a little bit on talking about the history of comics, comics have, and the superheroes have traditionally been written by men as much of pop culture. And they've been written for men, for boys. They started, I was watching the Disney Plus documentary about Marvel 75 years from pulp to pop culture. And one of the things they mentioned is that a lot of the traction for the superhero comics of Marvel were gained during the World War II era, when all these men were at war and they wanted like an icon to strive for. So Captain America was huge because he was like an icon for them fighting in the war. And I think, you know, as a boy, as a kid, growing up, I just always assumed comics were a boy thing. I think I always thought, you know, like girls don't like comics. Like this is the boys' world. Girls have princesses and Disney. The boys have comics and superheroes. Yeah. And so, you know, honestly, I didn't really give a second thought when I saw female superheroes that were in, you know, revealing costumes. It was just, to me, it was just part of the world. And I think like you too, I didn't really think about it until I was older, probably not even until college, honestly, and had more healthy friendships with females and started realizing like, this is actually what objectifying is. And that's when I started reading and watching these movies with a little bit more of a critical eye rather than just accepting it as it is. But even, you know, just even in the history of the superhero world, like going all the way back to the beginning, the female in the story was usually like a side character, the damsel in distress that, you know, like Superman had to save Lois Lane. And they really, you know, the women were just kind of put in their corner. I was reading up on the history of Wonder Woman a little bit and how she, you know, started off as this very revolutionary character in the 40s as this strong female superhero. And then when she got taken over by a new writer for the comics, when the original writer, you know, left that, they kind of reversed and went back to some of the old stereotypes and female tropes of her just like feeling like she had to give up the superhero life to be in the kitchen again, to be a homemaker. And so, you know, it's just interesting for me reflecting on that, both where we were and where we've gone, and how you even said like, now this is something you're drawn to as a female. And I think we see that a lot today, like Marvel and even DC, they've done a lot to try to prop up the female superhero more and show that they're not just a prop, they're not just a side character, but there are strong heroines in the superhero world today.
Yeah, and I do think too, I mean, even just when you read the newer comics that are being put out there right now, there is still just this overt sexualization.
Right.
You know, and so Clark has the history expertise, right? But I mean, I'm a big Spider-Man fan, and I love, like, if it's got Spider-Man on the cover, I'm in, I'm reading it. And I think that the stories between like Spider-Man and Black Cat, for example, are like super interesting and like really just well done. And I think she's like a super interesting character and everything, but like, come on now. Right. I mean, for real. So part of me, like as a 40-year-old man, I'm just like, I like these stories. I think she's an interesting character, but I mean, come on. So it's just a little like frustrating and discouraging, and especially like raising a daughter, kind of being like, my kids aren't super into the comic book life right now. And honestly, there's part of me that's not pushing it on them. Because of how the women in particular are portrayed. And I don't really want to put that in front of their eyeballs.
Yeah. Yeah. Kevin, we were talking about this before together, and you said too that it honestly makes comics hard to read sometimes.
Yeah.
Because of how women are still objectified in comics today. As far as they've come, there's still that objectification.
Yeah. And it's inherent to the art, I think, because part of the identity of a superhero is their costume.
And the physique, right?
Yeah. And so
like they're always perfect physiques.
Right. And so it does make it hard to read. But there was a X-Men TV show after the Fox original animated one. So this one was recent. The storylines are great. I think they did one season of it. But it was hard to watch because some of the X-Men characters, specifically Emma Frost, wears nothing but a coat. And I'm like, what in the world? Yep. And it's so impractical.
That character in particular in every series that she's ever in.
Yeah. Every time she's drawn. I don't know why.
It's just, she is a major part of that show. And it made that show hard to watch, even though I love the storyline, where they were going with it, with Genosha and all this stuff. Like, it was probably one of the best X-Men things that I've seen on the screen. But I would not recommend anybody watch it. And my son's super interested in this stuff right now. He's just turned 9, but I'm not letting him watch any of those things because it's inappropriate, right? Which is in contrast with the Star Wars. So the new Star Wars movies, I just recently had the family watch just the first two, episodes 7 and 8. And it was crazy because I thought it would be so awesome for my daughter to see someone like Rey, you know, be such a capable hero, not be objectified in any way. But you know what's crazy? It's actually my wife, Tracy, who is so moved by Rey's depiction. Like, halfway through the movie, she's just like, I love Rey. This is amazing. And it hit her because she grew up in the 80s and the 90s with certain ways that females were portrayed. And so for her, it hit a lot harder. As for my daughter, she's in a different place because she's got two boys as brothers, a younger brother and an older brother. And what she does is she wears princess dresses, but then all of these toys that are behind me, she'll grab that hammer and beat up the brothers. She'll be in a princess dress with the Iron Man helmet on her face. And
the,
like,
princess superhero.
Yeah, for her, it's all blended together. It just fits together. There's there's no distinction. She's like, I like this dress. This is what I'm going to wear. But then I'm also going to beat you up. So get ready.
So watch out.
With Mjolnir.
Yeah.
Exactly. And even the Lego sets. So we have mixed Lego sets that are, you know, the Lego Friends girls Lego sets. But we also have, like, the Star Wars and the Marvel Lego sets. And they blend it and mix it all together. And it's really cool. Even for the brothers to play with, you know, the other Lego sets and to include them. So you have, like, the Marvel characters and the Star Wars characters. And they're playing, like, you know, bedroom set and kitchen set and all that stuff together. And then an evil bad guy comes and they all fight the bad guy. So there's a mix of all of those types of things. And I love that.
Yeah. And, you know, as much as we talk about this is, like, in the animated world, it still shows up in the live action movies, the MCU. Not as much. I think Marvel and Disney have done a good job of making everything family friendly for the most part.
For the most part. Except for the Tony Stark. Some Tony Stark scenes.
Yeah. But, you know, it's interesting. I remember when, I think it was when Infinity War came out, there was an interview that Elizabeth Olsen had concerning her character, Scarlet Witch. And one of the things that they talked about was her costume. And she mentioned how, you know, all the other women in the MCU are covered up. They're wearing very, you know, strong, practical outfits that make sense for the characters. And yet for her, she's kind of the lone sex symbol, so to speak, as she still has cleavage. They didn't really, and one of the things she says, they never really evolved her costume. And she even said, can I cover up a little bit more? And you know, that was to me another point where I was like, huh, as a man, I honestly would not have thought about that, and was not aware, but it made me both appreciate what Marvel was trying to do and yet wondering why this is still existing, why her character still needed that. Although she did acknowledge they came a long way from where her comic animated comic
was. Scarlet Witch
was
in the comics
before.
In that costume, big difference.
Yes. So maybe Becca, as our you know, guest female to speak into this person, a friend, how can we think about, when it comes to this world of superheroes, both the, there's positives, right? The empowering of women, and yet also navigating and guarding this area of objectifying, whether it comes to ourselves and viewing it, or guiding students because we're youth ministers, or our kids as parents. What are just some of your thoughts on that? How do we handle that, this world that tends to have both, right? Both the empowering and yet still the objectifying.
Yeah. You know, it's a hard conversation to have. It's a hard thing to recognize that we're still in this place of that the objectification is very present, that especially now where I think the conversation of just women empowerment and everything is even more so. Before it was, I think, an older conversation, right? It is now happening in our high schools. It's happening in our middle schools. And so as people that just constantly are working with students and with families, I think one of the things that we get to do and be a part of is to call out the good parts of this, mm-hmm. right? But then to also say, like, our role, a parent's role, a youth pastor's role, any adult's role, really, who is working with students and working with someone who's younger than them, our role is to help them to steward their humanity. And therefore steward their sexuality, because mm-hmm. that is a part of their humanity. That's a part of how God made them. Our desires for intimacy are a part of us, and nor should we act like they aren't there. But I think there's a way that maybe the church hasn't always been so forward in talking about it, that we can, in a very holy way and in a very intentional way, help our families and help our students steward their sexuality and steward their desire and steward their bodies and their physicality in that way, mm-hmm. right? And so we do this every summer whenever we have to talk about pool parties, right? We do this every summer and any time that we are going to go watch a movie. And I think part of our conversations get to be having that conversation with them of what is it that God has created us for? How is it that God has created us differently? And so when it comes to these movies and it comes to reading the comic books and it comes to buying the action figures, it comes to all of that, I do think there is a really big role that we get to play where we get to have that conversation with a student that says, like, you are made in the image of God. That is not something that gets taken away from you, no matter how much someone does objectify you, mm-hmm. right? But I also think one of the things I do with my students a lot is we talk a lot about the role of the Holy Spirit and in our lives that tells us and reminds us of the promises of Jesus for us and thereby reminds us who we are. And because we are in community and in Christian community with one another, it then becomes our job to remind each other about the Holy Spirit in us and to remind one another, hey, you are called to live a different kind of life, right? You are called to be set apart. You are called to steward your humanity well. You're called to steward your sexuality well. And so that means that for our guys, we ask certain things of them and ask mm-hmm. them to consider and honor their sisters, not only in how they look at them, but also in how they talk about women, how they consider them when they want to date, how they consider what the guys wear, what, you know, and we also ask the same thing for our girls to consider their brothers, not just in what they wear, but in how they think about them, how they talk about them. This is a very holistic conversation. It has very, you know, there's so much there that has to do with the physical presence, but it also has to do with our mindset and how we're thinking about one another. So, you know, in the same way of, I think the physical stuff and in the costumes and the way that we address what we wear is, or what someone wears on screen or anything like that is like an easy thing to talk about because it seemingly is an easy fix. Just add more fabric, right? What is harder to talk about is the heart condition, yeah. right? Yeah. What's harder to talk about is your mindset whenever you see someone. Yeah. So in the same way that we often criticize and hold boys more accountable to saying like, hey, you're more visual, you need to like learn how to dart your eyes and all of those things, right? Like there's a whole other podcast we could talk about in that, but there's sense of putting a lot of emphasis on a woman's body just by asking guys to do a certain thing, yeah. right? But even in there, we also tend to tell girls, it's okay to call boys stupid. Mm-hmm. It's okay to refer to them as dumb, that they're just like thinking with another part of themselves, right? Mm-hmm. By us making that kind of language okay, yeah. in the same way we make it okay for the guys and say like, well, this is just how you're built. We are not addressing their hearts. We're not mm-hmm. addressing the fact mm-hmm. that they've been created for more.
That's so good.
And I think we can all agree that every time that we ask our students to reach for the higher bar, because mm-hmm. they are created in the image of God, they always want to reach for it. because for them, they're seeking out wholeness. We all are seeking out wholeness. Yeah. And whenever we ask them to reach for the higher bar, to think about something deeper in a new way, I've only ever seen them really, really try to get there. And so I think in this conversation of objectifying women, of what it looks like to change that world mindset, I think it's possible and doable, and Marvel's working on it. Mm-hmm. DC is working on it-ish. and we also have more to go.
Yeah, I think that's really good what you said, Becca, about this is a communal thing. Because you even mentioned at the very beginning about the team and how it's the teams working together, whether it's the X-Men or Power Rangers or Avengers, whatever it is. And, you know, we say this with when it comes to race, but I think it applies also with gender issues, that it's not just one party's responsibility. It's everyone's responsibility to grow and be aware of the issues, whether it's the objectifying women and women's rights, or even, you know, the way that women treat men. It's both sides need to work together for this. And I love that you mentioned that, and how it's even, to me, it seems like it's reflected even in the superhero world, where, and I think even for us as consumers and watchers and readers of superhero mythical lore, when we're aware through like friendships with the opposite gender, and we have these strong ties that are, I think we often just feel like, you know, women just talk to the women, guys just talk to the guys. But I think that also kind of perpetuates these, you know, stereotypes, these objectifying, these gender norms that we can't break across the other side and learn about the other person's experience. So I think that's important to remember, that if the church is a community, then we're a dual gender, male and female community that has to work together in these issues. And the more we do, I think the more we'll be aware of it. Like I mentioned, even for myself, I was not even aware, honestly, about the objectifying women in comics until there were other girls that saw it and said, wow, she's not wearing much at all. And I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. I didn't even think about that. So I really appreciate that comment. I think it's really important.
Yeah. Well, and I think we see some of that kind of mutual responsibility in just what movies are really popular and how they're received. Mm-hmm. I mean, you even think about like Harley Quinn and, you know, the Birds of Prey. And
right.
I mean, how many, it's such a popular Halloween costume and everything. And yet we do have these positive examples that have been very well received with Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel and Black Widow, if that movie ever comes out. you know, and so there are positive examples, and there are positive role models in that regard. And so, you know, Becca, I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about what do those positive examples mean in terms of representation?
Yeah.
A few weeks ago, we were talking about race and about the significance of the Black Panther movie for the African American community and for what that means for them. And so you have these conversations with other teen girls and everything, you know, what does positive representation in comics and in the MCU and DC and everything look like for you?
Yep. Such a good question. I think I loved both Wonder Woman and I loved Captain Marvel. And, you know, they're not perfect movies. And yet at the same time, they brought out the strength that I think a lot of girls and a lot of women want to be able to say that they have, a lot of the confidence, a lot of also just being seen for the strengths that they have, mm-hmm. for the things that they bring whenever they walk into a room, when they walk into a situation. I think both Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel, those movies spoke to that here were these mm-hmm. women that, in their various different ways, because it was part of both of those storylines, that they were constantly expected to do less than what they were actually capable of, right? Mm-hmm. And in both movies and in both stories, being able to actually fully step into the way that they were created, to fully step into their powers, to fully step into their stories, and to do so in such a way that actually brought it brought healing, it brought growth, it ultimately will bring other movies, mm-hmm. thankfully, right? Like, it continued the story, it built mm-hmm. the story, it didn't just like you know, completely shut everything down. It wasn't so complete, they are not so separate from the rest of the Marvel or the DC universe that mm-hmm. Everyone would just, could just toss them away. Like, they were right. necessary pieces.
They're central yeah.
You needed yeah. them, yep. right? You needed them to continue on with the rest of it. Mm-hmm. And seeing that kind of strength, seeing that kind of character building, seeing, if you think about Wonder Woman and the way that she kind of consistently put herself in positions of always saying, no, 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 this is what is right. And this is what is true, mm-hmm. right? The fact that like her weapon, one of her weapons is the lasso of truth right. is insane yeah. to me, because no man ever has that kind of power, right? But like, here's a woman that they like created forever ago. But this is one of her things is, I am going to show you the right way.
Yeah, yeah.
That is my role. And I actually do think that's a very biblical role mm-hmm. for women mm-hmm. and that we yes. see they constantly doing. I've actually been having this conversation a lot with our girls, with our girl students, of one of the patterns we see in scripture is that often women are called to remind the men that they are partnered with, mm-hmm. that they are ministering with, to continue to lead, to mm-hmm. step into the role of leadership, to step into the role of their strengths. So you see Miriam do it with Aaron and with Moses. You mm-hmm. see Deborah do it with Barak. You mm-hmm. see Tamar have to do it with Judah. You see Esther do it with King Xerxes, right? We see Ruth do it with Boaz. Like, it is mm-hmm. a pattern of scripture. And so we also get to see that in our Marvel movies and yeah. our DC movies, yeah. which I think is really, really cool. So there are these really positive things that come out of these really, really strong characters and these strong women. Now, when you toss in Harley Quinn with that, we've seen Harley go from a very, very side character in the comic books, in the animated series of Batman, and very much her only existence was for Joker's like benefit, right?
Right, right.
And so what we've seen in the last few years of her getting her own story and her own back kind of a backstory and being able to step into the forefront is it is empowering in its own way. And let me try and explain that a little bit. It's empowering because I think what we don't see with Wonder Woman and we don't see with Captain Marvel is what happens when you come out of a type of life that is in, that is filled with trauma, that is filled with hurt, that is filled with pain. Mm-hmm. That you can argue that for Captain Marvel, but essentially we pick up on her life story of
right.
This, she's always wanted to be a pilot, right? This was just a part of it. Mm-hmm. And she kind of got sucked up into alien world, right? So like, mm-hmm. With Harley, we are seeing a story of, here is someone who was hurt, who was who did experience trauma, and she's creating a new life out of it. Mm-hmm. It's not the best life. It's not a life that I would want a daughter of mine to live. It's not a life that I want my students to look at, right? Or my niece. I have a 4-year-old niece. I definitely don't want her to be doing that. And yet at the same time, I understand why Harley's story is so engrossing right now. I understand mm-hmm. why some people would want to hold on to it, because if some girls are coming out of a trauma-filled life, or if they're seeing that there is a hardness to Harley that speaks to their own hardness and to their own heart, I do think I understand why they would say, I feel like I'm closer to Harley than I do to Wonder Woman, who yeah. seemingly yeah. is perfect. Mm-hmm. Right. I feel closer to Captain Marvel, who is an alien now, or I don't feel as close to that. I'm sorry, like as who's like an actual alien. I feel closer to Harley, who somehow also ended up with some friends, even though she's kind of weird and crazy and psychotic and yeah. kills yeah. people. Right, like it is. I get why it's now a thing.
Well, and that the subtitle for her movie is The Emancipation of Harley Quinn.
Right.
That it's this like, oh, like now I'm emancipated from the Joker and from all of the abuse and like damage that I have received from him. Like, I'm now free.
You know, and I think there's also, going back to the kind of the over-sexualization, I do think because over-sexualizing women is a part of our culture, there is, for a lot of girls and a lot of women, this thing of, I want to be desirable, and somehow Harley Quinn has that kind of roughness to her that evidently men like. So maybe that's the kind of superhero I should be going after. Maybe that's the kind of desirable I should go be going after. Mm-hmm. And again, that goes back to, how are we helping our students? How are we helping our kids steward their minds and steward their sexuality, steward their desires in such a way that they can tell what is healthy and what is not.
Right.
And so I think it's fascinating that right now we have both of those kind of superhero movies happening. Mm-hmm. You have the Wonder Woman's and the Captain Marvel's, but you also have the Harley Quinn's. And I just think it's part of our role in the world to help people understand the differences between those and why one would be better than the other, but also what's the good that comes out of Harley Quinn's life.
Yeah.
Super interesting. I think it's interesting too, that is definitely mirrored among the male characters as well. Cause you do have the more clean cut Supermans, but you also have like your Deadpools, and there's a draw towards both of those types of sort of rebellious characters. But at the same time, they are superheroes. And for the most part, they're trying to do something good. There's like a redemption arc to those that I think is
right. The anti-hero, more like we talked about.
Right.
Yeah.
Which, I'll be honest, is not my cup of tea, because it's too scary for me and Mike. But
I was waiting for it.
But I do wonder, in the future, is there a, so just like the movie Joker, that's not a superhero movie, right? That's a villain movie. So I do wonder, like, is there versions of that coming down the pipeline, you know? And you kind of have that with like the Disney version of Maleficent, right?
Right.
So you do get a little bit of that happening in our culture as well. And I think it's good to see those perspectives and those, you know, but I think it's as you said, Becca, like, so important for us to have those conversations to compare and contrast those perspectives. Because this is really helpful in terms of nuancing. What is it? What is attractive about these films and these characters and what draws us to them?
Yeah.
Right.
And so on the, that's a lot of the Thanos side of the podcast, right? On the Theos side too, is a lot of what you were talking about, Becca, with, you know, the women, kind of speaking in truth and, the significant and meaningful and valuable biblical role that women play. I mean, I just think about, you know, Genesis 1 and 2 and, pre-fall. What God says is not good for the man to be alone, and so he created a woman as a helper suitable for him. And just digging into that helper word, it sounds so like minor. Oh, it's a helper, like go make a sandwich, helper. Like, but like the Hebrew word Ezer, like the Hebrew word Ezer that's used there is used all throughout the Old Testament. Of reinforcements, right? That like you go into war, and then the Ezer comes, the reinforcement, the helper comes and helps you win the victory. And that it is not this competition, that the competition is part of the fall, right? That the part of the fall of the curse was that your desire will be for the man, not like, oh, I love you so much, but like to be like to overtake him like a wolf takes his prey. And so that the battle of the sexes really is the result of the fall, and that pre-fall in Eden is the Ezer, right? That like God has given a mission to man and to woman, and that like women are the reinforcements that we need to win and to thrive. And it's not this competition thing. So I just thank you so much for bringing that out. Cause I think that's so helpful in what we see that in comics and in MCU and in the Justice League, and that there's not this hierarchy of like, oh, like, we'll give the real job to the men and the women can take the, like, the small villains.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You don't see that happening.
Yeah. This is an awesome connection you made, too, of the lasso of truth and those biblical connections. I think Wonder Woman is just overall a fascinating female superheroine in superhero history. Both the way that she was conceived, conceived from the writer's standpoint, not, not conception as a baby.
Sure, we can go there, Clark. Yeah.
Poor choice of words. I apologize.
Deep breaths.
It's okay. It's a youth ministry podcast. We can do that. But yeah, you know, just thinking about how this writer I was just reading up on this. I didn't know, but the author of Wonder Woman was one of the originators of the DISC test, D-I-S-C, the personality test. He was a psychologist. And Wonder Woman was created with this conversation of him and his wife about creating a female superhero. And he kind of modeled Wonder Woman off of his wife, who he always thought was not this, you know, gender normative woman who would just stay in the kitchen, but she was a strong woman. And yet there's still this like feminine beauty with Wonder Woman. Like you mentioned, even like Harley Quinn maybe is the more rough on the edges. But we see Wonder Woman, she maintains this like feminine side, even though she's very strong. And you know, some I think some women may be against that, especially in modern feminist movement, maybe say, you know, like, is it still objectifying? Is it still, you know, putting her in a box? But I remember there was this exchange between James Cameron and I think Patty Jenkins is her name, the director of Wonder Woman, where James Cameron was like, well, you know, there we go. We're just taking another step backwards because you have a yet another very feminine superhero that's just there for the male gaze. But I remember the director saying, like, if that's all you see, then we haven't even taken a step forward, because she is in a position of strength, and yet she still has a feminine side to her, and that's okay. Like, women have this duality of both. You don't have to take one and not the other, and I think that's also a good word for when we talk about, you know, femininity, feminine qualities. You don't have to have strength without beauty, and there's this beautiful creation of God in women, where yes, like maybe we've taken it too far of the beauty and the physical beauty and attraction with objectifying, and yet we don't want to deny that there's that side of females in the world. And yet we also can't just say women are just supposed to be this trophy wife. You just stay in the corner and do your thing. But there are great, strong qualities that men don't have, that women bring to light. And the female superhero embodies those in a way that we see not in the men. So I think that's great.
Yep. That's a interesting history. I didn't realize that about the creator of Wonder Woman. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's a good thing.
So as we wrap up conversation in a little bit here, I think I'd be really interested in hearing, as we just talk about, you know, kind of men and women working together and making an impact and making a difference. As a woman serving in youth ministry, I don't know. I want to speak too confidently, I guess. So correct me if I'm thinking. I would guess that women serving in youth ministry are probably received differently than women serving in other areas of ministry.
Like children's ministry.
But like that, like women serving in youth ministry and children's ministry, I think is probably better received than other areas, or I don't know. So I'm not really sure what my question is exactly. So help me understand what I'm trying to ask.
Yeah,
and just talk about like the women's experience in ministry.
Well, and I think also,
I
think especially in our more conservative circles, honestly, women have just been relegated to the low helper role, like not this position of strong helper, but low, like you go prep the lunch for the event, go take care of the kids while the men do the ministry. And unfortunately, some of that has been revealed even recently with that still the way that in our conservative theological circles, women are viewed. And yet, like we're seeing, like we just talked about with superheroes, with female superheroes, there is great strength that women have to offer. And I think, yeah, it'd be great to hear your perspective as a woman, especially in a conservative circle. I think you mentioned you're in the PCA, so, and yet how can we elevate women to positions of platforms where they can speak into important issues and even leadership within even the biblical confines of God's creation roles for man and woman?
Yeah. So let me try and break it down a little bit. I think answer two different questions that I heard. So first question would be, you know, how are women often, I think, viewed and received within youth ministry? And so I have been at my church for 11 years now. This is my 12th summer. And I was here for 2 years when I was first hired in, I worked underneath a youth pastor. And then after 2 years, I became the director. Now, in my denomination, we don't ordain women. So director of any ministry is really the highest a woman can get to as far as titles, right? Mm-hmm. And so I've been the director for 9 years now. And in that time, I've hired different male interns or assistant mm-hmm. directors to work with me. And then 3 years ago, really long story we don't got time for, but essentially have decided to hire not an assistant to report to me or an intern to report to me, but to actually hire a co-director. So my co-director is Steve Yates, who often is a writer for Rooted and part of our whole family too. And and part of that role, part of us kind of assuming this co-directorship was a desire that I had and our senior pastor had at the time to really say, like, what our ministry needed at that point and where it was at was someone that I did not have the capacity at that time to teach someone else how to do ministry. We were growing at such a rate and in such a way that we needed someone that already knew the role and had that pastoral training in him to come and do it. So we hired an ordained man to come and work with me. But what my session in my very conservative denomination wanted to make sure was that because I had been there for so long, they in no way wanted me to feel demoted, right? Mm. So we had to very clearly communicate, this is the role that Steve's going to play. This is the role Becca's going to play. And that alone is, first off, something I've never heard of or seen in another church. A lot of the times when you see co-pastors, mm-hmm. They are a married couple. Right. And Steve is married, but not to me. right. So he has his own family. And so this idea of co-shepherding, co-pastoring, co-directing, is a very new thing. And yet this is what we've leaned into and fought for and has worked out, and gotten to communicate that to our students in a way that says, no, you can't, it's not just that Becca's over the girls and Steve's over the guys. Right. We've communicated that to our students. We've communicated that to our parents, that our role has been, in the much the same way that, our students need to have a spiritual father of sorts in Steve. They also need to have a spiritual mother.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And male, that goes and female, not just for the girls, right. That goes also for the boys.
Right.
I am so thrilled with the relationships that I have with some of my guy students of getting to be someone for them that they get to test out and try out. This is how you have a healthy relationship with a woman. Mm-hmm. Right. And this is how, and for my girls to have, this is how you have a healthy relationship with a man, right? Is that is part of our role. Again, going back to that, we steward their entire humanity. We steward all of them. And that includes teaching them how to have these healthy relationships. And so, I would say that most of the time in youth ministry, women are relegated to admin roles, mm-hmm. to detail-oriented roles, to not teaching roles. And one of the things that I've been so thankful for at my church has been giving me the opportunity to enlarge everyone's perspective of that and to say, like, nope, I've still taught twice every Sunday for the last 9 years, right? And there are, like, we still teach on our retreats, and I do leadership training, and I do, I meet with girl students and I meet with guy students one-on-one. Like, all of those things require, you know, certain levels of care and intentionality in how you do them. But, being able to kind of expand everyone's idea of mm-hmm. what women's roles are has been one of the, like, highlights of my ministry career. Mm-hmm. That is not normal. And I think it should be normal. Mm. I think what scripture leads us to, what, that word azor leads us to, is to say that men and women are actually meant to be doing ministry together. And yeah. scripture calls to say that we will not do it as well if we leave people mm-hmm. behind. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it should not be that women need to take over the church in any way, shape, or form, nor right. should it be that men need to have all the leadership in the church in all of the, in every way, shape, or form. And with there has to be a beauty, and there has to be a space for all of us to sit at the table together. Mm-hmm. So to the second question, how do you create that space? How do you empower women? How do you find those roles? I would encourage all leadership to essentially ask that question, much in the same way that we are starting to ask this question we should have been asking a long time ago in the conversation of racial reconciliation, mm-hmm. is looking around the table and asking the question, whose voice are we missing? Mm-hmm. Often in the church, we are missing women's voices. Often in the church, we are missing the women who, because they handle a lot of the logistics, have really, like, in-depth knowledge of how things are working. I cannot tell you, in the time of COVID, of us trying to figure out what regathering looks like, how much we needed the women in the church who knew the ins and outs of how things get cleaned and all of that. We needed their, or who knew the ins and outs of even just our different software programs we use of contacting people. Like, we needed those roles. We needed those gifts. And I think when it comes to us empowering women, and empowering any voice that's not often in the room, it literally is us having to take a humble stance mm-hmm. as leadership and saying, okay, my voice often gets spoken. My voice is often heard in this room. Whose voice is not? Mm-hmm. Who can I make sure that I ask, hey, what's your thoughts on this? Mm-hmm. Hey, mm-hmm. do you have opinions about this? Or just saying, we need to build a longer table. We need to make sure that this is not just, and this is maybe even more important, is that when we invite people to the table, when we invite people's voices in, that we make sure they understand that it is a, and even maybe for ourselves, it's not so much that they need to understand it, but we need to understand that, and maybe just to say it flat out, that, like, I need men to understand that, like, when I'm coming to the table, I don't want to bring a fold-up chair and, like, find an edge of it. that doesn't speak honor.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
What does speak honor is that we're going to build the bigger table to make sure you have a seat here because mm-hmm. we need you here. And that's the thing that I think as we look out at these movies, at these comic books, these stories of these heroines that are becoming more and more prevalent, that's what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They're saying, hey, I have more to offer than just a fold up chair to the table. Mm-hmm. And I think, actually our king would tell us, hey, these women have things to offer. I think mm-hmm. Jesus would never have given a fold-up chair to Mary or Martha. Mm-hmm. I think he would have said, we got to build a bigger table, right? Those are those kind of conversations, and recognizing that heart stance and that heart posture, I think is what's going to be, especially for this younger generation of women and of men who are coming up and saying, whoa, 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 I see the inequality in the other generations. Our world will not be like that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to build a world like that. I think those are the ways that we can empower them and encourage them. And that's what I think also scripture has always pointed us towards.
Nice.
That's so good. Yeah,
that's really good. Build a bigger table. Jesus was a carpenter. There's some rich connections there.
Just whipped it out, you know?
Yeah.
Widen the Justice League table, the Avengers table.
I think that needs to be the name of this episode. Build a bigger table.
Yeah.
quick question, going back to comic books real fast. Just a lighthearted question. There was a moment at the last Avengers movie in Endgame where the women had a shot where they all gathered together and they were ready to take on Thanos. Just want to hear, like, what was your reaction to that shot?
Oh my gosh. I think I cried. I might cry now. I'm going to hold off. It was incredible because here they came. And true Ezra fashion, right? Here they came, weapons ready, arms up. We are here. We're here to fight. We're here to win. We are here to do this really, really big thing where we're going to save the world. Here we are. And it was, I had all the goosebumps. It was, I remember being in the theater and it was just cheers left and right. Yeah. Like everyone freaking out, even the men being like, oh my gosh. Because right, like, and I think this is in a lighthearted way, but also as a man, what is it for you to see like a group of women coming down in a parade on the road? And they've got their staffs and their swords and you're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Right? Like there's
terrifying.
Terrifying. There. Exactly. Because we inherently know, like, wow, that is some major power that has been in many ways locked away forever.
Yeah.
And here we go. We are ready to unleash it. And it is going to be the strongest thing you've ever seen. and not stronger because we're better in any way, shape, or form. Not stronger for anything except that our strength is made more because we stand alongside our men.
Yeah.
And the men's strength is made more because they stand alongside their women. And that goes across the board for marriages, that goes across the board for friendships, for just recognizing that we are brothers and sisters in the family of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And we are all heirs of the priesthood. And so that gives us all this amazing, amazing opportunity to build the kingdom. And we don't got time to mess with, you know, I would say kind of lame conversations about, well, whose job is it to take out the trash? We don't have time. We have to build a kingdom. We don't have time for that, right? And yet it has been the conversation instead of the really important one, which is we got to build a kingdom. Who's the best at what? Let's go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Amen. I love the A-team team up, all the women come behind. I got chills when I saw it because I was like, oh my gosh, if I was on the other end of that, I would know trouble's coming. But also just, you know, the same way we see these standalone Avengers movies, most of them were men, but there were, you know, some women ones like Captain Marvel. The same way you see, like, every movie had these strong female characters, whether they were side characters or more prominent characters, and yet getting to see them all come together and team up was a cool, like, the identity of team as females was there as well. So,
yes, very cool. It's a great thing.
Mike doesn't want to share.
What? I'm enjoying the conversation.
We won't put you on the spot, Mike.
You're trying to get me in trouble, Clark.
He's afraid of saying anything incriminating on our podcast.
Legitimately, Clark's job.
Okay, all right. You're throwing me under the bus. I loved the symbolism of it, but like when the world is in jeopardy and Thanos is like destroying everything, it's like for that particular task, Captain Marvel was enough.
She could have done it on her own.
She could have done that on her own. So as a movie watcher, I appreciated the moments. But as a tactician in the battle, I'm thinking like, what are you doing? Keep fighting and killing the people who you are actively killing. Captain Marvel's got this. So
it is a fair,
you know,
I will say it was a little odd to me when it was Captain Marvel and then all these women came and they were like, she has us. And I was like, man, she doesn't even need Captain America. She doesn't need him. She's like,
fine. Like she took down that spaceship all on her own. Like, What is Mantis gonna do right now?
Sleep.
So
to be fair, I also saw that and also felt that same thing.
Yes. Yeah. So Clark's just trying to not let me get out of that bus's way.
Yes. Both things can be true. It was a fantastic scene, super empowering, and also we all knew Captain Marvel.
Yes.
But superhero movies, that's all they're filled with. It's all sorts of logical things that don't make any sense.
It's
look
so true.
Awesome aesthetics.
Yeah.
It's so much of it.
As long as it looks awesome. I will say there was another smaller moment when you get that kind of like female power team up in Infinity War. I think it's when Scarlet Witch is being fought by Proxima Midnight. Is that her name?
Oh, yeah, in the trench.
In the trench, and she's like,
in the trench, that was awesome.
She's like, you're all alone, you're going to die. And then out of nowhere, you hear Black Widow, she's not alone. And then they beat her up together like that.
See, I loved that.
That was a great moment.
That was awesome.
Where I was just like, yeah, Black Widow, like, girl power, team up. Mm-hmm. But it was a very small moment, and yet that one always gets me when I watch Infinity
War. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah. All right, well, we should probably wrap it up here. Thanks so much, Becca, for coming on and sharing with us so much good stuff.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
It was super fun. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, and I'm just like, I love how you know so much about comics and the animated series and everything. It's just awesome. That makes me think, like, you need to be a regular female guest, special guest.
Oh, listen, have me on anytime. I know. Yeah. It's a big part of my world. So
cool. Well, thanks so much. Hope you guys all enjoyed this episode as we navigate these issues, very modern issues of sexuality, gender, but even just as it pertains to the world of comics that we love, that reflects pop culture and how we navigate it in our biblical worldview and the church. So thanks for listening to this episode of Thanos to Theos. If you want more Grace-filled, Gospel-centered, Bible-saturated resources, be sure to check out our website again, www.rootedministry.com. Thanks, guys. See you later.
Wash your hands.
Bye, guys.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Thanos to Theos, part of the Rooted Network family of podcasts. For more resources designed to equip and encourage you to faithfully disciple students towards lifelong faith in Jesus Christ, be sure to find Rooted on the web at www.rootedministry.com.